Das sind die Hans, 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 Hans. Das sind die Hans, 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 Hans. Das sind die Hans, 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 Hans. Well, I could die a happy man if I could be with you. Behind these eyes I believe fantasies can come true.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you aboard tonight, everybody. A lot of talking about hockey going on tonight because we have a guy back that I love having on the show because he brings a completely fun and usually a very good insight to the show. Welcome back, Brian Svensson, who you can normally hear on the bench warmers, but we're going to have him warm in this bench today. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Let me tell you, after talking about baseball so often, I'm used to longer games, but I a little bit longer than I was expecting.
Let's start there because I mean, Tampa Bay does play today. They resume their series, game two against Columbus today. Obviously, a very long game in game one, 8 periods of hockey. How are you holding up through that that craziness, considering everything that happened this year in terms of you know, waiting for hockey and waiting to see Tampa Bay playing meaningful games anyway, combined with obviously what happened last year?
So I kept telling myself that I wasn't going to watch any lick of Tampa hockey just because it wasn't good for my health this postseason. And you know, when they drew Columbus, I was like, oh man, here we go again. It's going to happen all over again. And, you know, I didn't watch the first 3 periods. And then my mom was like, hey, so we've got free center ice for the postseason. Did you want like the code for that? And I was like, I guess so. So then I started watching the overtime, and every single time Columbus took a shot, I was like, you know, here we go. They're going to score. The demons are still here. There's no monkey off of no backs, and I'm just going to be miserable. And then Braden Point in the 5th overtime put me out of my misery. So I'm still going to lose the series, but at least I got one win.
I was going to say they exercised at least one demon, which is good to see. Now we'll see if we can get the other 3 off their back as well. That'll be good to get that going. But I mean, let's talk a little bit about the playoffs. Obviously we'll get into this a little bit because some surprising results, some unsurprising results, but we'll start with maybe one of them because that team has looked very good against Philadelphia. That's Montreal. Penguins are probably going to be reeling after a little bit after this season. They already cleaned house in terms of assistant coaches. Gonchar, Recchi, and Martin all let go. I mean, I'm not going to lie, when hard work can beat talent because talent doesn't want to work hard, I mean, that's the story of the series. But I look at that Montreal team and I go, they're not as bad as everybody thinks they are.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to say. You know, talent, you want to talk about talent. I think Montreal is probably on par with talent with that Pittsburgh team, minus Sidney Crosby, you know, and maybe a Jenny Malkin. But Carey Price is obviously the better goaltender. And God knows what Sullivan was thinking, still playing Matt Murray. And on top of that, not only are you taking a bad problem, you're making it worse by playing Jack Johnson 20 minutes a game. look, Sullivan won 2 Stanley Cups. I think the team won in spite of him. I think that, you know, he made bad decision after bad decision in that series. And you have to look at maybe getting a coaching change. And they're stuck with that roster. There's no way out. You're still paying Jack Johnson, what, $5 million for the next 83 seasons?
Something like that, yeah.
It's bad, and it's only going to get worse.
I got to ask, only because it reminds me of him so much, is Matt Murray the new Jim Carrey in terms of the flash in the pan, oh my God, he's the next big thing in terms of goaltending, only because he won a couple of Stanley Cups with the Penguins. But is Matt Murray the new hero to zero?
I don't know necessarily if that's – I think he's a form goaltender. You know, when he's hot, he's hot, and when he's not, he's not. And he's just going through a bad run of confidence right now, and that happens. I think he's a more apt comparison is probably Cam Ward.
Okay.
That, you know, he'll never peak in the same way that Cam Ward did winning that cup. But I think that he's still probably a very serviceable goaltender. So, you know, that's just kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fair. I just look at it and I go, if Tristan Jarry is going to be your new guy moving forward, you have an expensive backup on the bench. So
he should be. He should. Tristan Jarry should be the guy going forward. You know, and you do have a very expensive backup, and you basically just have to hope that Seattle takes it.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that coming up, I guess. But the other big surprise, obviously, is that no Sidney Crosby moving on. No Connor McDavid, no Leon Draisaitl moving on. As the Blackhawks did their best to eliminate all of the good young stars, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews finding their legs again. What did you think about that series? Because honestly, if I'm Edmonton right now, I don't have a lot of answers for the fan base.
Well, again, and I think the problem here is coaching. You had one of the best lines in hockey for most of the season in Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Kyler Yamamoto, and you decided to not play them because why? I don't understand. And when you turn yourself into a one-line hockey team, you're going to end up with problems in the playoffs because, you know, teams will just focus on shutting you down. And say what you will about Jonathan Toews, he's still a very proficient defensive forward.
Yeah.
And when you combine him a solid defensive back end, you end up with problems for a one-line team. And that's exactly what we saw. I can't say I'm surprised. Edmonton never, ever gets out of their own freaking way. And, you know, it's just more of the same for that franchise.
Looking at how they have a number of expensive options up front, obviously, in terms of the way that they've structured contracts and stuff. Looking at how that team is put together, are you worried about the goaltending situation now that they've sort of committed hardcore to Mikko Koskinen? Because he didn't look anything like he did in the regular season.
Yeah, yes, yeah. I mean, that's probably the easiest way to say that is yes. And it doesn't help when you spot the team a win by playing Mike Smith also. you know, when you have two bad goaltenders on expensive contracts, that hurts even more. And I don't really know that there's anything they can do to solve that except hope that Koskinen just catches hot at the right time. You know, you can get your way through a regular season without a great goaltender, but you can't do it in the playoffs. And if that team's goal is to win the Stanley Cup, which is what every team's goal should be, then they can't do it with that goaltending tandem. It's just not going to happen. And that's a hard truth. That's a hard truth for the fan base to swallow, but that's the truth that they're going to have to swallow.
I know that he's taken some heat in various cities that he's been to since he scored 40 in Pittsburgh. Is there anybody on that Oilers team outside of maybe Connor McDavid that can reignite the scoring prowess by James Neal?
No, I think Neal's just kind of over it. Like he's over the hill. He's past it. There's not really a lot left in the tank. That being said, I still think that was a good trade to get out from Milan Lucic's contract.
I don't disagree with you. Actually, I mean Lucic is playing well now for Calgary. Don't get me wrong, but it's taken them what, 4 years to figure out how he can play again. So I agree. It's a good idea to get out from underneath that contract for sure. The other big, obviously, we talked about the team that did it, but the other team that kind of fell flat on its face, despite all of the high-priced talent it had, was Toronto. Toronto getting shut down by Columbus, especially Jonas Korpisalo, who looked fantastic in his playoff starting debut. No cap relief coming up from the Leafs, so what strategy do they have going forward to try and, again, take that next step that they keep promising each and every year?
Well, they are in trouble cap-wise. Like, it's not just cap relief. They are in five-alarm panic trouble. They're losing Cody Ceci and Tyson Barrie. Now, you can say that they're probably not actually losing those guys. But, you know, those are still NHL players, right, that you're going to have to replace with minimum contract guys because the cap is staying exactly where it is. You know, the only way what do you do about Freddie Anderson? You cannot extend him if you're the Leafs. You're talking about a guy who's turning 33, that is, you can't, on his last year of his deal, you can't extend him. That's a career-ending move for Dubas, at least in for the Leafs. I think you have to legitimately look at trading William Nylander. Because you're not going to be able to get off of Mitch Marner's contract, right? That's not happening. So, you know, in order to be able to supply yourself with some depth, you have to legitimately look at trading William Nylander, because you're not going to trade Austin Matthews. You can't trade Marner or Tavares. So you don't want to trade Morgan Rielly. So what exactly does that leave you? You know, if you trade Johansson, if you trade some of those other back end guys, you leave yourself with no depth. It's a scary situation for the Leafs. I think that they've peaked. I think that this is as far as they go.
I don't disagree with you. I think that trading Nylander in a cap situation like we're going to be into for the next year or two is going to be tough when he's at a $7 million hit. I mean, 6.96 or whatever it is for $1 million per year. I don't think there's a lot of teams that are going to have that sort of flexibility now with the cap being we're stuck at $81 million. You might have to start looking at trading guys that were a little bit more, how should I put this, effective? Guys like Kapanen, guys like Hyman, guys like Travis Dermott, who's a restricted free agent. Like, you're going to have to start trading talent in order to give you that cap relief. And I kind of look at Winnipeg the same way, in that you don't have a lot of flexibility anymore. You have a little bit of playroom, but guys are going to come in and go, look what I did, I want more money, and you don't have it. And that's where, like you said, somebody's going to have to step up. Some of those unproven guys, maybe from the minors, are going to have to step up, because there isn't any relief anywhere in the future for this team.
Well, they don't. That's exactly it, though. They don't have it, right? They don't have, even if you, so if you trade Kapanen, right, who's making, what, $4 million a year? What player are you?
Cap's 3.2.
Are you getting for $4 million or $4.2 million? So that's even worse. He's making 3.2. What player are you getting to replace Casper Kapanen at $3.2 million? That's going to do everything that Kapanen does. You're not.
Right.
That player doesn't exist. Spoiler alert.
When you look at a guy like Alexander Kerfoot, who's making $3.5 million, playing on their third or fourth line, and yeah, I get
God,
it. You got
disaster of a trade. Holy cow! That Kadri for Kerfoot and Tyson Barrie trade might be one of the worst I've seen in a long time.
Well, that's exactly it. Like, I look at that now and I go, Kerfoot's good, but he's never going to be what Kadri's now becoming in Colorado. And Tyson Barrie has just had the worst situation ever in Toronto, not being able to find a defensive partner he can play with, not being a favorite of any of the coaching staff. Injuries are starting to catch up to him. Like, I don't know Sorry, Brian.
They have to let him walk. Like, you can't keep Tyson Barrie after how he's played for you. You can't keep him.
But that's just it. Like, I'm just going, holy smokes! Like, you've got to figure something out here pretty quick, Toronto. And I mean, again, Kyle Dubas gets paid a lot of money to do this, but my lord, you're asking for trouble in terms of keeping these guys around if you're going to try and re-sign them, because you're not getting the return that you want on them.
No, that's exactly it. And Mitch Marner is making the richest contract for his position in the league, and he's not performing to it. He wasn't, I don't think he'll end up on anybody's heart ballot. And you know, you're looking at basically two guys or three guys that are performing to what you're expecting them to perform to. And that's just not acceptable for a team that is capped out entirely, and even worse. They're in trouble. Very much trouble.
Do you look at, and I mean, now that it's happened to them twice by two different teams, Boston did it a couple years ago and certainly last year. Columbus has done it this year. Is this team, in terms of having this flat-out idea of having these wonderful offensive players and having these kind of mid-range defensive players. Like, granted, Jake Muzzin was injured, but mid-range sort of defensive players, Cody Ceci, you know, Morgan Rielly, when it comes to playing defense, is this a team that legitimately is structured poorly from the back end out? And I'm not criticizing Anderson here, but from everybody standing in front of them. It seems like the teams that are dumping all this money into the high-end forwards are the teams that are out first. Edmonton, Toronto, and Pittsburgh, who have done that, have no specific defenders that you go, he's a stopper. He's the guy that will shut somebody else down. Is this the wrong way to build a team in the new NHL?
Yeah, I think so, right? I mean, unless something changes drastically and the game becomes more open and offensive, I think that's probably the right way of looking at it. And it's unfortunate because, like, as fans, you want to see a more offensive-friendly style of game, especially, and I think that's not necessarily the regular season, but it's a growing and long-lasting problem that the league has had, where it presents one product in the regular season that is open and high-flying and offensive and fun, and one product in the postseason that is bogged down, that is rife with uncalled penalties, that is clutch and grab, that is slowed down and molassesy, and is distinctly not fun for outside fans to watch. I mean, the league wants to talk about how, it's the hardest trophy to win, and, you know, it's the playoffs are the best time of the year. But if you're a casual hockey fan, the playoffs aren't exactly a lot of fun to watch because the game doesn't resemble anything close to what you're used to seeing in the regular season.
Right.
And you can make arguments here and there about whether or not it's better or worse. But, as far as casual fans go, it sure doesn't look better. I think that as a result, you have to build your team more defensively and with big guys that are going to clog stuff up because that's how you win in the playoffs until the league decides that actually wants to call penalties.
Well, right, and I mean officiating has been all over the map so far in terms of what we've seen in the playoffs so far. Speaking of being all over the map then, because it was kind of I wouldn't say an issue, but it certainly reared its ugly head in one series. Jets and Calgary, I mean, Calgary came in and played as physical as any team that's ever come before them. They basically beat the Jets into submission, if not, you know, just eliminating any offensive ability they had to do anything. Exit interviews are happening today. They've happened over the last couple of days. We've heard different players and certainly management today talk about their views on the season. And it sounds like everybody is fairly happy in Jetsville. Are we selling the rose-colored glasses here? Because I don't know as a fan if I'm happy about where the Jets finished based upon how they played in the postseason.
If I'm a Jets fan, the only thing I'm happy about is Connor Hellebuck. That man dragged a bottom five team in the league kicking and screaming to a playoff position. And what should have been, you know, if the season finished, they probably would have made the playoffs. We're talking about someone that I wholeheartedly believe should have won or should win but won't win the Hart Trophy for
right.
his performance this season.
Yeah,
that's how incredible Connor Hellebuck was. And he dragged that team kicking and screaming all the way to the playoffs. And I don't know if you can expect that based on what we've seen from him. Is that the normal for him or is that an outlier? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you for that, but that team had no business being anywhere near the playoffs, and it was entirely the efforts of one man. And you know they have you, me, and three of the Bison women could go out there and be a better blue line than the Jets have this year.
I don't know if that's true. I might. Yeah, I mean, you could probably throw a pylon in my place, but that's okay. But that comes down to the same thing though. I mean, the Jets have built heavily into their system a very high priced offensive group and not a very strong defensive group. And again, it showed all year and granted, you're right. Connor Hellebuck deserved more recognition than just the Vezina trophy. I think he should have been in that Hart Trophy discussion as well, based upon the fact that he was the busiest goaltender. He made the most high danger percentage saves, all the crazy, you know, advanced stats basically proved that Connor Hellebuck was the reason the Jets were in the playoffs. So it goes back to asking then, are there going to be hot seats in Winnipeg only because guys like Blake Wheeler didn't score in the playoffs. Guys like Kyle Connor didn't score in the playoffs. If Mark Scheifele is is the cog that makes that engine run on that first line. Why are we paying those guys so much money if they can't create opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And I mean, this is the team that Chevy wanted. This is the team that Chevy built. And, you know, he's got to deal with the consequences of that, I think. I don't think that, as funny as he is on the mic, like how comfortable do you feel with Paul Maurice being the coach of the future when there are guys out there like Gerard Gallant who are looking for a job?
Laviolette.
You know, yeah, exactly. Those are two guys. And, I mean, there's a lot of personal things that Mike Babcock has to atone for, but that's another, you know, hockey mind that, you know, if you know, he has grown as a human being and recognizes the faults he committed as a person. You know, those are three guys, you know, that are hockey wise better than Paul Maurice. And I mean, I would have fired Kevin Cheveldayoff off 3 seasons ago. But I think the time to actually fire him is now. You know, you're coming up to one of the most difficult off seasons that any GM and any front office is going to be facing coming forward, and you want to have the right guy in that spot. And Kevin Cheveldayoff is not that guy.
I mean, we understand, and I mean, maybe it's not known outside the circles of Winnipeg very much, but we understand in Winnipeg that there's a pretty involved ownership group locally anyway that might protect guys like Paul Maurice and guys like Chevy.
Loyalty's big for them.
Right. And I get that in terms of how Mark Chipman maybe runs the franchise. But I'm looking at it now going, if I'm Mark Chipman and I want to see this team maybe take that next step again. Again, we're going back to I'll go back to the Western Conference final. The key to Winnipeg winning that year were the complementary pieces, the actual added layers of depth that we had in the lineup that made scoring easier on everybody. Is it time to move one of the big pieces in order to bring in a number of complementary pieces? And I ask because second line center still hasn't been addressed. First line defender hasn't been addressed. We have an elite goaltender, but we probably don't have a backup unless Michael Burden is ready to go. So I don't know if Chevy has the wherewithal to make the trade, but if you were the GM, would you make a trade? Would you trade one of the big stars to bring in a handful of complimentary pieces?
Yeah, I would. I absolutely would. I would even look at moving a couple players. I think that if you can get a team to bite on Blake Wheeler, I trade him, and I guarantee you could get a team to bite on Nikolai Ehlers, and I would trade him. I think Kyle Connor, I think Patrick Laine, and I think Mark Scheifele are the forwards you want to build around. I do like Pop. I think he's a player. I think if you can get decent draft pick returns, or even getting off of his potential future contract, I'd trade Adam Lowry. I think they need to build a better blue line. I mean, you've got some okay guys, you know, your Morrissey's and your Tucker Poolman, some okay guys, but you've also got absolute train wrecks that are getting regular minutes like Anthony Boteto.
I'm not going to lie about this. There are, as of right now, there are four defenders under contract. Morrissey and Pionk, I'm pretty sure everybody's okay with. The other two that are under contract right now, Dahlstrom and Poolman. Poolman, I can live with. Dahlstrom should not even be in the conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I have to actually eat some crow. I made a culpa. I was talking to everybody who would listen to me when they made that trade that Neil Pionk made Mark Stahl look good. That's how bad Neil Pionk was in New York.
Right.
He's not like, I mean, he's not someone that you want on your first line defensive pairing, but he can play. He can eat meaningful minutes and on a playoff hockey team. And he's someone that is you're probably pretty comfortable having. As your power play guy, right?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. And he's 25. I mean, he's still young. It's not like he can't, again, you're asking for guys to take major steps here, but it's not like he can't get better. That's the thing. I look at, again, Tucker Pullman's already 27. Neil Pionk has two more years, and he's probably already better. That's the thing. So,
yeah. I agree with you on that. I think Neil Pionk's a player, but they need more defensive pieces to help out, and more role guys.
Yeah,
you have to balance the roster.
I believe that again. There's a number of guys that are coming up for both restricted free agency and unrestricted free agency. Jets apparently will have about $15 million to spend. Cody Eakin's probably not coming back, which is okay. No, I'm not going to complain too much about that. But again,
I forgot all that extra money from Bufflin.
Yeah, you're going to have a pile of money coming out from Bufflin in terms of what you have there. If, again, Brian Little retires, you may have extra money there as well. We'll have to see what he does. But
every single person in Winnipeg is hoping, right?
But I mean, I would like to see it only because I don't want to see the guy get hurt again. Like, he's not even ready to play right now, and he's talking about coming back. You know, he's going to play it safe, he said, and check things out. But, you know, he wants to come back, and I'm going, slow your roll, man. Like, this is long term. You got to talk, you got family, you got the whole, there's a lot to worry about here other than just, can I get back on the ice?
Yeah, life is more important than hockey, and I think that's something we all need to realize, you know, and that's something he probably needs to realize. I mean, it doesn't matter how competitive you are,
right?
Your life after hockey is far more important than what's going on the hockey rink.
I mean, we've probably seen Kulikov, unless he's going to take a pay cut. He's probably played his last game for Winnipeg.
Played his last game for a lot of teams.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we saw Roslovic out there. Looked like he was coming around. He's a restricted free agent. Jansen Harkins, who everybody seems to like and wants to keep around, he's a restricted free agent. Mason Appleton's a restricted free agent, and then you have the handful of waiver. Oh, I love. I mean, Mason Appleton can do all sorts of stuff, but then you have the handful of free agents that made up the fourth. You have no fourth line next year. Nick Short, Logan Shaw, Mark Letestu, and Gabriel Bork are all gone. They're all unrestricted free agents. Like, I look at this and I go, the Jets are legitimately back to being a 2.5-line team with four defenders again. And we have $15 million to fill all the rest of the holes.
Yeah, and $15 million is not enough to fill all of the rest of those holes. Not even remotely close. So, I don't know. If you could free up money by trading those two guys that I mentioned, Wheeler and Ehlers, I think you could balance the team. You could go out and spend, you know, upwards of $7 or $8 million on, even nine, on a real proper, especially because there aren't going to be a lot of teams that are going to have the space to make real prominent moves. You might be the only team or one of two or three teams in the running for, you know, a premier defensive free agent. You know, and when you do that, after you do that, you know, that really does help shore up. And if you bump everyone down the depth chart a little bit, that helps. That really does.
That
could be the difference.
I've been lobbying since he was in St. Louis for a guy like Joel Edmondson for Winnipeg to really prioritize a signing for like a Joel Edmondson. And watching him in Carolina this year, I think he would fit so well in terms of what Winnipeg's trying to do here.
Yeah, I actually 100% agree with that. I think that's a great signing. That'd be huge.
I would take it in a heartbeat, and then I was going to say I would bump Andrew Kopp up to be the second line center, and I think you have your top two lines basically set at that point.
Yeah, and then you go out there, you find some depth pieces, you know, and there are going to be a lot of guys out there who are free agents this coming year, and there aren't going to be a lot of teams for them to go to that have the space.
Right.
If the problem is where are you going to find the teams to take on the contracts that you want to get rid of? Because there aren't teams that have the space. So, you know, where are you going to find the buyer for Blake Ehlers? Where are you going to find the buyer for Nikolai Ehlers? Or, you know, whoever the heck you want to get off. I'm sure every single fan in Winnipeg wants to dump Patrick Laine. I'm not sure that's a super good idea, but, you know, there have been worse decisions made by people. I don't know, Keith. It's a tough situation. You have all this cap space, and you're gonna need to spend all of it. And there could be a real opportunity for the Jets to make some smart, savvy moves in a free agency pool where not many teams are going to have the space to make those moves.
Florida lost to the Islanders, which is fine, because Florida seems to be doing the same thing Florida does every year, and that's spin their wheels and not understand how to actually build a proper team. I'm shocked that a team that still has Huberto and Barkov playing as well as they can, as well as they do, can't win 3 of 5 games against the Islanders, who seem to find scoring at the right time whenever they can. But in saying that, Dale Talon was fired, which I think was long overdue. And it might have something to do with a $10 million goalie that he signed.
Oh, God. Sergei Bobrovsky was awful this year. He was really bad. And that's the thing with goalies. They're so voodoo. I love Bobrovsky. I love Carey Price. I don't know that you can build a Stanley Cup winning team with an $8 million goalie or even a $10 million goalie, because it's, like, we're all nuts, dude. We're all voodoo. We're all crazy. And we don't know whether or not we're gonna pitch a shutout or let in 8 on any given night. It just sometimes it happens, man. And so spending that kind of money on a goaltender just seems like the dumbest hockey decision you can make.
Reports out of Florida seem to indicate that there might be a sell-off of talent there again.
Yeah, but who?
Dadonov apparently was the one player whose name was being bandied about, which I wouldn't mind seeing moving to maybe a better team. But after giving up a guy like Trocheck, after giving up, you know, various other pieces over the course of time, is Florida just going to be one of those also-rans for like the next 40 years?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're consistently one of the worst-run franchises. I think their owner isn't exactly a particularly bright individual. And he's also pretty micromanaging and meddly. You have to remember that this is a guy that Donald Trump at one point in time pegged to be part of his administration.
That's true, yeah.
So that doesn't exactly inspire confidence in me. The problem, again, with teams who are looking to sell pieces off is who's buying them.
Right.
And that's something I have to keep asking. If the cap is going to stay flat, it's not going anywhere. And there are a lot of teams that are either, you know, I mean, if not at the cap, so very, very near it that with guys coming up, you know, that they're going to need to renew or give extensions to, reward for their good play. I just don't think that there's a heck of a lot of money to go around, and there's not a lot of space for teams that are looking to, you know, pull fire sales to really tank and rebuild. I don't know that the teams to sell to kind of exist.
I mean, the one team who could really maybe make a difference out there, and I mean, I know they've taken on some terrible contracts, but they got a pile of them expiring this year. The one team that might be able to really shake things up, and they have a ton of picks this year as well, the Ottawa Senators. The Ottawa Senators right now are locked in next year for just $41 million.
I would. So this could be slight hot takey, and I don't have any sourcing on this.
Okay.
But I would keep my eyes on them, maybe trading up to get Lafreniere.
I'm not against that idea. They have 3 first-round picks. They have 4 second-round picks and 2 third-round picks coming up this year. Like, they legitimately are picking, like, every second pick at the draft this year. So I could see that maybe
they have
going somewhere, going to the Rangers for something, and them getting the option to do that, yeah.
Well, I mean, because think about it, right? Lafreniere is 100% a left winger. Dude cannot play anywhere else on the rink. You know, I hope that no team tries to pull a Montreal Canadiens and try to convert him into a center, because that's just not, it's not going to happen. He is a transformative, incredible player, but he is a left winger. And the Rangers already have an MVP level left winger already playing there. So you're talking about, like, obviously, you want to get as many good players as you possibly can and as many, like, MVP-level talents. But you can only play one of those guys on the ice at a time, except on the power play. And if you are putting Lafreniere on the bench for longer periods of time because you already have, you know, Panarin, who is, oh my God, incredible. Then it's, I don't know, man. I just don't, I see there being a potential for the Rangers to trade down and acquire more assets. The other one that I thought maybe could be a good fit for a trade for them would be Los Angeles, who have plenty of center prospects, have plenty of center prospects, and the Rangers could use one of those.
If I'm the Rangers, though, I'm looking at D. I need D badly because we can't stop anybody from scoring. And no. You're right in that there are guys out there. And I mean, maybe a Nikita Zaitsev isn't the guy that excites you too much about that. But I look at when you talk about Los Angeles in terms of what they have on the back end, there's some decent players there. And again, we're not talking about the $11 million that Drew Doughty's pulling down. But if you're talking about a Ben Hutton who doesn't cost very much, might be a player that the Rangers can take on, just because, again, they're talking about salary demands as well. You got an option there. Again, if you're talking about, like you said, centers, a guy maybe like, I don't know, throw a name out there, an Adrian Kempe or Gabriel Velarde. I mean, there's some really good players, some really good young players that maybe the Rangers can go after and save themselves a little bit of money while also
sure,
getting
better. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't think that's bad at all. The trade I think I like the most for them is them trading one and Georgiev for three Ottawa picks, probably what, 3, 5, and something in the third round.
That would probably work out really well for them. Yeah,
I think I like that quite a bit. I think that probably works out for all parties involved.
I mean, if you're LA as well, I mean, maybe this is something you do. You just swap you're picking second anyway. Just swap the pick with a player and go pick Lafreniere first.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that all works out perfectly fine. Yeah.
And Quinton Byfield and Tim Stützle are right behind in terms of the central scouting. If you're the Rangers and you want to pick up another centerman, there's your option right
there.
That's
exactly it, right? That's exactly it. You get Byfield, and it's not even a problem.
And all of a sudden, you got a second overall pick and a defender plus a Byfield coming in. Rangers look pretty good after that.
Yeah, and I think it ends up still helping Los Angeles or Ottawa. I think it helps Ottawa even more, you know, because then they get a Francophone superstar. But I think the Rangers should trade down. Honestly, I think he's a fantastic player. He's going to change somebody's franchise. I don't know if this fits right anymore.
I happen to agree, and I mean, and I'll throw this out only because it can and maybe should be said. The Q stats are a little bit different. The Q doesn't really play a lot of defense. So people need to sort of, you know, oh, he's got so many points, he's going to be such a great player. Temper those thoughts a little bit, because Q is a little bit different than the Dub or the OHL. So
I'll keep that in mind.
The Mike Milbury tweet, I want to talk about that, because I'm almost certain that Mike Milbury not only is the dumbest man on television, but might be the dumbest man in hockey.
It's him and Roenick. They're 1 and 2, however you want to slice it.
I mean, Roenick is just ignorant, but I think Milbury is just dumb. When you put out a tweet talking about the Space Needle while you're in Toronto, chances are you don't know what you're talking about, and I'm almost certain that carries over onto the air.
He's not bright. You know, what was it the other night when somebody got hurt and he was talking about how, oh, good move by him to fake it to get the whistle?
Right, yeah.
Like, it's just, the man is a never-ending chain of just tone-deaf, ignorant statements. And I've never, ever, ever liked him. And I don't think he has a place in hockey anymore, dude. I don't.
His suggestion
of... to go.
Well, yeah, and I mean, his suggestion of people getting bored of overtime hockey, I don't know where that comes from, considering that overtime hockey in the playoffs is, like, the best hockey ever. Next goal wins.
Unless you're a fan of one of the teams.
Well, yeah, then it's a little bit more, you know, a little bit more heart attack inducing. But I mean, I look at that and I go, like, anything can happen. I mean, we saw some of those shots off the crossbar, goaltenders making ridiculous saves. Like, guys are doing everything they can to get that puck to the net, and the goaltenders are doing everything to keep it out. And I just go, you can't take that away from fans. There's no way you can reduce that. Come on.
No, I agree. I agree that, you know, as long as you're not a fan of one of the two teams that are watching the game, overtime hockey is the kind of tension that baseball wishes it could drum up.
Right.
Every single shot could be something that ends, you know, makes a legend, ends a season, you know, wins a cup. Everybody knows exactly the sound. Like, you can picture it in your head right now. The sound of the ting from that slap shot that Yzerman took to beat the Blues. Like, everyone, right. Everyone knows, right? And it makes legend. And so, yeah, overtime hockey is incredible. And to be against overtime hockey is ridiculous. Oh my goodness. I hate Mike Milbury.
I love it. That's awesome. A couple other series we didn't talk about. We'll just go through them quickly. Obviously, Nashville and Arizona. Arizona finally showing the fruits of maybe John Jacob's labor, even though John Jacob's not there anymore.
I'm gonna chalk this up more to a Nashville loss than a Arizona win. They've got some good players in Arizona, but Nashville's got a lot of talent, especially on the blue line, and they just can't get out of their own way. I think John Hines is a terrible coach, and I can't believe that they fired Pierre Laviolette just to hire John Hines. So dumb.
I mean, I know Hines and Poile have a bit of a history in terms of working together, but I agree. Like, I don't think John Hines should be a head coach, period, let alone a National Hockey League head coach. But Laviolette's track record was, again, way better. And looking at what he did with that Nashville team in terms of making them a far more offensive team, made them a better team. And that's the thing I think Hines doesn't get, is that they just can't sit back in their own zone and rely on Pekarinen and UC Saros. They're good goalies, but if you score zero goals or one goal a game, you're not going to win very many hockey games in the NHL.
Nope. No, you can't do it. You gotta put the pucks in the net. And you know, the way that he structured his defense, even though they were sitting back, they weren't sitting back productively, and they were still conceding all kinds of high danger shots that you know, gives goalies heart attacks. I just bad. It was the system was bad, and it, you know, and I, David Poile, I have a lot of respect for. I think he's been a very good GM, and he's one of the few GMs that actually takes risks, which is not something you can say about a lot of NHL general managers. But, you know, to sit there and say, oh, you know what I want? The guy that made New Jersey bad again, let's get him. That's ridiculous.
The guy who legitimately had no idea how to get a puck down the ice. I want that guy.
Ridiculous.
I've seen comparisons now, and a couple of social media people have put them out. Is Vancouver a young Chicago team of the early 2000s? They have a lot of good talent up front. They have some decent talent on defense. They have what looks like Jacob Markstrom looks like he's finally rounded into form. Are they, should they be considered a valid threat to win a Stanley Cup?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, I think I'm really ready to take that plunge. They've got a lot of really fun players. And they've got a lot of really good players that are not just good, but entertaining to watch, entertaining personalities. They're fun. I like Markstrom. I don't know how long I'm going to continue to like Markstrom. You know, we're all, as I've said before, we're all nuts. He's one day away from having, you know, a complete blow up and a meltdown, something you just kind of have to take with goalies. But right now he is as hot comes. I love Pettersson. I love Besser. I hope to goodness for Vancouver fans that they don't trade him in some ill-sighted trade this offseason, but they've got a great team right now. The West is kind of weird. I mean, who else do you have really that's a huge threat in the playoffs right now, other than maybe Colorado and Vegas, that's a bigger threat than them?
I mean, that's just the thing. I mean, it's so, and I mean, again, I'll take nothing away from the East as well. There's a chance that, you know, things could go crazy there. But I mean, you watched the Blackhawks play the Golden Knights the other day, and again, Golden Knights and Blackhawks looked like they were fairly even though they were like 30 points different in the standings. But I look at that and I go, okay, like, let's see what we can do here now in terms of getting teams out of there. Like Dallas, I don't know if Dallas just doesn't care, but they look like they're completely done. They're gassed already. And then I look at the way that the Avalanche are playing, and I go, I don't really know if anybody in the Central can stop the Avalanche, considering all the talent they have moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's a mess. Playoff hockey's kind of weird, you know? Playoff hockey's kind of weird, so... Who knows, but I definitely think that Dallas has seen better days.
I think Dallas has seen better days. Let's get to the new stuff, because there's a bunch of new stuff. I'll start with obviously the new team. We haven't talked to you about this, Brian. So Seattle Kraken, good, bad, indifferent. What's your thought on the unveiling of the look and the name?
It's in a couple parts, I think. One, stupid name. Really, really dumb name, but then the logo and the jerseys are fresh. They are, whoever their graphic designer is deserves several pay raises, because those jerseys and that logo are incredible. But man, oh man, I'm not a fan of the name. The fact that they basically decided on this from day one, just because they wanted to have some silly internet meme that they can play at the beginning of every single game, is one of the most out of touch old white guy things I think I've ever seen or heard of in my entire life. The Kraken has zero ties at all to Seattle, and there could have been a million things that they could have done. At least on the bright side, they picked a stupid name, but at least they didn't pick a racially insensitive stupid name.
Well, I mean, it's not like the Raptors, where they just literally jumped on the Jurassic Park idea and then made that. And then they had the goofy cartoonish logo as well to start with. I mean,
I think it's worse than that, though, Teebs. Jurassic Park is one of the best five or 10 movies of all time. One of the 10 most popular movies of all time. This is a reference to an awful Jerry Bruckheimer movie that had Liam Neeson in it that tanked. So it's not only is it a reference to a movie, but it's a reference to an even worse movie than Jurassic Park.
Well, I mean, and I'll defend this, because I mean, he wasn't involved with that, with the whole Clash of the Titans, but the Kraken does make an appearance in Pirates of the Caribbean, which Bruckheimer had a big hand in. So, I mean, I guess that's some of the tie-in possibly, but I mean, we'll see going forward. I know, I mean, I vowed on my blog not to ever mention any sort of drug references to the stuff that people were talking about, crack house and all that kind of stuff. I like the idea, though, that they've already got an idea for the fan base calling the Squid Squad. Like, there's a lot of fun that they seem to be building into this team. And I think that giving this, and again, it's hard to give a team a personality, but giving it this fun, we're going to come out and we're going to destroy you, but we're going to be fun doing it, kind of air to them prior to them even taking the ice, is a good way to build a lot of momentum, at least in terms of gaining fans and gaining popularity.
See, I hadn't heard that name for the fans, Squid Squad. That's good. I like that.
That's what I said. I was like, that's actually really, really good. I have no problem with that. And I kept saying, like, in terms of, like, you know, if you're going to have some fun with it, in terms of, you know, just calling them whatever you want. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff you can do in terms of, you know, Day of the Tentacle and all sorts of craziness. Because, I mean, if you're into your 90s, early 2000s sort of, I mean, the whole Maniac Mansion, you can call the arena Maniac Mansion with Day of the Tentacle. Like, it works out so well that there are all sorts of little pieces of pop culture they can bring into it without being the whole release the Kraken kind of idea.
I agree. And again, like the jerseys and the logos are minty.
They're fantastic. They're fantastic. And the fact that the fact that they aren't going with a white jersey, I think, is, or they talk about not going with a white jersey, using that light blue color, is fantastic. No white jersey, as much as I like to see white jersey.
I think they are using a I think they're using a white jersey too. Oh, if you go on their site, they've got got white jerseys. Yeah. I think that they talked about it, but then the NHL said that it's a problem for colorblind people.
Well, light blue and white, I don't know if would how different it would look to. Again, I'm not colorblind, but I don't know how different that would look. But I think a light blue jersey would be like almost like, again, they're talking about how it almost looks white, and I'm going, then just use it.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain type of colorblindness that's like orange and like aqua. I'm not 100% sure. Again, I'm not colorblind, and yeah. I'm not entirely versed in it. But it would cause problems, at least with the Islanders. Who else uses orange? Can't think off the top of my head, but that's okay. But I do have to say, even though I don't like the name Kraken, I think it's silly. The fact that there are like sports commentators out there calling it the worst name in the history of sports, while there are three teams in baseball named after the color of their socks and a basketball team named after a type of pants, is all kinds of ridiculous.
I mean, I don't disagree with that either. I mean, there's certainly some stuff that some teams out there that
it's
we
not can even the worst name in hockey.
Which name would be the worst name in hockey for you then?
Oh, the Wild! Come on.
I love it. That's awesome. Did you happen to see the Royal Blue return to Buffalo yesterday?
I did.
Or Tuesday.
It's. I did. I have to say that, you know, it's more for people of the excitement for that sort of thing is more for people of my dad's age who remember the likes of Gilbert Perreault. I think they look nice.
I happen to agree. I think they did a good. I mean, again, I'm not big on the white accents that they threw on the stupid sleeves and the numbers and the striping, but. I think it looks more, it feels more Buffalo again. It feels Pat LaFontaine. It feels like Alex McGillivray. It feels like when I grew up, that's the blue that I remember them wearing. And again, I mean, I'm not talking
Dominic Hasek.
Exactly. Dominic Hasek was in there. I mean, you talk about the guys that really sort of built the franchise into what it is. And those are the guys that were wearing the royal blue as opposed to the Navy. And I mean, you know, you can talk about the Chris Drury's and the guys who came after that. But I look at that LaFontaine when Brad May and that, I mean, that, you look back at the highlights and you're just like, man, like that's how Buffalo should look. And it seems that now they do.
Yeah. I think the teams are starting to make more and more better jersey decision choices, because I think that it's much easier to not only crowdsource, but to field test basically and understand where, like what people like and don't like. So we're not going to get, you know, stupid jerseys like, or logos, at least like the Buffalo slug. But I mean, at the same time, like Arizona hasn't gone back full time to the Pagenina jerseys, to Pagenina jerseys. And Tampa decided that the best way to win a Stanley Cup is to make themselves look like the Toronto Maple Leafs. Some teams are still making bad decisions.
Well, speaking of teams that are trying to get back to their original, Ottawa has announced that they're going to be unveiling their new/old logo and jerseys after Labor Day. Do you want
fantastic?
You want to see the old ones come back? Yeah.
Oh, it's about time. I hate the 3D Senators logo. It looked great when I was 11 years old, but you know, once you become a real adult, it's such a silly, badly, poorly designed logo when they had such a simplistic great one. I'd like to see them go even further back and just get the big O going again. But
it sounds like that may be used as an alternate jersey still. However, I just reading the Bruce Garriock article about it. Their expectation is sometime after Labor Day, with school back, they want to bring everything sort of back together and allow people to be able to come and see them. So it sounds like sometime in September, we'll see what the Ottawa Senators are going to look like starting next year. In terms of, again, we're getting near the end here. I just want to make sure that we get a couple more topics plugged in here a little bit. In terms of the changes, because Brian, you're involved, and then we'll make sure we plug this a little bit. You're involved with the Canada West women's hockey, and certainly some of the Canada West stuff we do. Thoughts on Lethbridge departing essentially being canceled without any sort of knowledge being told to the players of the plans.
It's bad form, Thieves. I mean, you've got these players that are going out there and they're basically, they're living and dying for you. You know, they're, say what you will about you know, college sports, but they are beneficial. And I think it's sad that they, you know, just kind of came out of nowhere. And it's just done. It's a program.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, we often had the discussions behind the scenes, you know, commercials and stuff or whatever, intermissions, of watching Alicia Anderson and just going, my God, she is ridiculous in that net. Like, she is so good. And then to completely just go, yeah, well, that doesn't matter to us.
I mean, women's sports are super important. I think that if, you know, and one of my big hot takes is if I don't know if you know this, but you know, in England during the Second World War, they had a women's only soccer league that started to get way more popular than the men's game, and so because of that, the government shut it down and made it illegal for there to be professional women's or illegal for women to play soccer, period, in England. And that didn't, you know, that ban stuck for a large number of years. And I have the contention that if they hadn't put that down, if the women had continued to be allowed to be the more popular version of the sport, I think that the world would be such a much better place. You know, we wouldn't be afraid of having women leaders in positions of power, because we would have been able to see them over decades be these incredible athlete superstars. You know, we wouldn't have all the problems of, toxic masculinity in sports. We wouldn't have problems of, you know, hidden sexuality, because, you know, you have all these women that are proud of their sexuality, whatever it may be, in sports. And I honestly believe that every single time you shut down a women's sports program somewhere, the world gets to be a little bit worse of a place than before.
That might be one of the most thought out, eloquent responses we've ever got here on the show. So good for you, Brian. That's awesome. I did not know about the World War II thing. That is something I will certainly have to read up on, because that is crazy in my opinion. So we'll see what I learned from that. Hopefully I learned a lot, but we're gonna get out of here right away. We're just about out of time here, Brian. I do want to give you a chance, so let you plug the bench warmers, because baseball is underway and certainly you guys are busy with that. So what's happening this week on the show that they can hear tomorrow? It's tomorrow at 11:30, right?
It's Fridays at 11 o'clock right now. We've cleared out the space for Front Burner, which is a show about COVID.
Okay.
And all the stuff about that. So we're Fridays at 11:30. This week, no Michael Elves, but we brought in a all-star bench bat to replace him. Chris Zook and I brought in Sportsnet's Arash Madani.
Oh,
to talk about Blue Jays. Yeah, so that's super exciting. Tune in 11 o'clock on Fridays this week. We've got Arash in to talk about the Blue Jays. Tune in for that.
Good to see the Jays back in action. Good to see that sports are starting to get a little bit closer to being back to normal. Brian, I want to get you back into the studio when we get back in there. So keep some time open on a Thursday in January for me, because we're definitely going to have you back and get you in, and probably do the Canada West preview show at some point, because we're going to start hockey at some point again. So keep those dates open for us, and we'll have you back for sure, man.
Absolutely, Teebs. Always a pleasure to be on the hockey show. Thank you so much.
Again, I want to thank you again, Brian. Everybody, that's Brian Svensson. You can catch him tomorrow at 11 a.m. on this station on 101.5 UMFM on the Bench Warmers. Thanks again, Brian, for doing this. We'll get out of here on the hockey show for another week. We'll see you again next week, folks. Here is Free Range Radio with Skippy on 101.5 UMFM.